Talking Industry, topical debate from the world of engineering, automation, and manufacturing. Brought to you by DFA Media Group. This episode is sponsored by Drives and Controls, the number one event for automation, power transmission, and motion control. Taking place the 5th and the 6th of June 2024 at the NEC Birmingham, in association with Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week. Register now at www.drives-expo.com.
And so it's more of an avant-garde jazz session today, but I think it's only fair that we do give Peter and Ian a few minutes just to talk about the subjects they wanted to, even though they already have. Peter, let's just have a couple of minutes on this cultural difference between the OT community and the IT community.
As I probably mentioned it a few times actually through the communication, but I started more than 20 years ago working for IT company. And of course, when you're designing their things, there it's very similar. You do have a different layers of the network, and you do have a major network that many switches, and it's all kind of very rigid and strict. And you know, when you want to create a more complex topologies, you have exact standards. How that applies in OT world, and you know, they were mentioning some RS-232, RS-485, J1939. They are topologies. They are technologies which are using twisted pair two wires. I've been working in one power generation plant. They used steel coaxial cable to run data between the controllers. And then suddenly you're talking, it's already talking about different physical layer. Then there is not like in IT, you do have the Ethernet. We're moving more and more towards the Ethernet. But there are, again, also disadvantages. There are companies like Siemens created Profinet. There is ArcNet. Ethernet IP from Rockwell, from Alan Bradley. These technologies trying to make it more OT friendly. But when you're considering an IT layer, when communications between your computer and to other computer, to server and back, going across maybe multiple switches, firewalls, routers, and they all delaying the system. And the system is designed to send a package of data. And if the package is not received, you're gonna resend it. This is, for example, in CAN bus doesn't exist. Once you send a package and you don't have a reply, the network collapses because the design was done 30, 40, 50 years back. And of course, to move from this into new world, we need a technology or device step up. And we need to still understand the technology which is out there. Advantage of it, why would somebody use RS-485 twisted pair cable? Because you can run it for 1 kilometer and get data very cheap way, considering. You can try to put a Wi-Fi on it, but Wi-Fi is not gonna run 1 kilometer and not in a building. And as soon you do have a multiple Wi-Fis are on, your data lost on a, for example, from some operation protocol will be so massive when you're gonna have a mess and not the data. Not you're gonna miss so much of informations on a network. Then this is important to understand and put this technology together to how you can use Wi-Fi, of course, but you have to have on both side protocols which can work with the Wi-Fi, are compatible, and are able to communicate without data loss. Because the data loss actually can decide and make a decision of losing the secure and safety on site. When going further of that, I said it a few times, that security is in a design. And security in design is one of the slogans actually for remote access products what we have. I'm quite new into OT Ethernet side, because before working in IT, but in OT, actually I ran into all the serial protocols and was working with that. New, I talking about 10 years. 10 years is enough information to understand when you're not putting correct features in your network, you're making it insecure, you're making it easy to collapse, but also what you're making it not able to scale it up in the future. Because if you, with every machine, you're going to send a different products portfolio, so with a different network features, it will cause problems for you in the future. Higher cost of maintenance, higher cost of security for the security. It's very hard to say how the world will evolve, but we can see the digitalization is going to be part of it. If we're going to start, we should start probably decades ago, but start to design OT layer with that in mind, when we will, because the people which using the data, people which interacting, they're going to connect through it into through the IT, if it's mobile device, if it's computer, or it could be some different, these days, augmented reality. Yeah, I had done a few projects on augmented reality. It works in what we call a studio environment or laboratory environment. Is that applicable in proper manufacturing side? Not yet. It will come there, maybe in 10 years. Technology, and this is again, software technology is capable of doing it. There is the hardware part which lagging. There is the physical part of the technology which is not at the level yet. And of course, you need to all interact, all connected in some way and save me. That's what I see is my living on the end. On the end, this is going to be living for probably my 2-3 decades. And I can't fall asleep. And I don't think anybody from manufacturer of machines, manufacturer of products, anybody from OT world should fall asleep, because this change is here already and you can't ignore it.
Thank you. If Ian and David like to make a quick comment on that, we'll move on to Ian's presentation. If you have anything to add. No, that's good. Ian, do you want to quickly talk on the physical side, expanding on anything you have yet to cover?
Well, you know, safety generally. Anyway, we've had this conversation before. Safety is such a big bucket. Even when you focus on the subject line, it's really difficult to cover everything that you want to say because there's so much to say.
Yeah.
I think for me, going back to the risk assessment and the end user's requirement, the best way to deal with safety is to physically segregate dangerous parts of the machine from access from people who sometimes aren't as focused as they should be. You know, the first time I saw a dual mushroom press, I thought, what a fantastic idea that is to save people's fingers. That's a pretty good example of you physically can't have your hand under the press if you've got to have them on a mushroom, you know. When I say physical safety, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to put an 8-foot fence 12 feet away from a machine or a production line, but steps to prevent that particular process from causing a problem. I'm an advocate that I think when you look at the different safety levels and you look at the type of software that exists within many different machines around the world, we should have a standard, one single standard that consolidates and everybody's working to the same, everyone's dancing to the same beat, if you like. I don't think that will ever happen, because the same reason we had VHS and Betamax, and you know, the same reason we've got three different mobile phone technologies around the world, the same reason that wireless safety has to jump through hoops depending on what part of the world it exists in. It has to be tested. TUV tests a lot of our wireless equipment to make sure that it does the right speed of action over the 800 meter distance that we've got for wireless safety. But I mean, fundamentally, if you restrict access by using trap key systems, our trap key system is unique in that it's linear, it's ATEX in some locations, you know, it's effectively on and off switches. If you want PLE, then there's two solenoids, for example, comply with the latest machinery directive. And that it has the ability to, you have something in your hand, you know, you are physically not allowed in unless you put the key in, and then you're not allowed to the machine on until you've taken the key out. So that is a very basic low down IO, you know, if you know binary, it's on or off. So, you know, that was the original piece of software. We still sell ever such a lot of that kind of technology in PLE environments in conjunction with our, like, your 6900 wireless safety, where it's not practical to run a cable kilometer to get RS485 out the other end, because there's interference, or a cable will constantly get cut in half, or, you know, I haven't got an electrician to come and open the control panel for you, Pete. So, you know, it's a very focused thing, where your 6900, our wireless stuff, which I wasn't going to talk about, but, you know, it's been on the subject today, is available for that kind of expansion. And you can't hack into it, our 6900, because the protocol's bespoke, doesn't run on Ethernet. And what we find is there are manufacturers out there, people try and have a smaller distance on 2.4 gig or 5 gigahertz radio frequencies, and they find that it falls over a lot. And the reason it falls over a lot is because the frequency is too fast. And it's okay if it's a computer, it waits until the next packet arrives. But for safety, you can't do that. I don't have ever such a lot of stuff to cover, because, you know, I enjoy our conversations that we all have. And if only we were very local, we could all go down the pub now and have
sounds
a pint.
Sounds like a great, great idea. David and Peter, do you want to add anything to what Ian has said that we haven't already covered? Or are you content?
No, I don't think so. I think the one thing you mentioned earlier on about the standards keeping up, Andy, and is there a disparity between what is actually practically happening in the industrial environment and what the legislation and the standards provide in terms of guidance? The regulations are very general in their approach, and for that reason, you know, we've got to make sure our machines are safe, and that's the legal bit. That they're the bits that you've got to comply with, and they're the bits you're going to get prosecuted under. The standards themselves, let's say that they're best practice documents in most cases, and there's this presumption of conformance using them. I would never suggest anyone doesn't use them. I would always recommend using the standards, and I'm a strong believer in the technical content. But we have seen technology advance quicker than the standards do. And that's why, you know, we have these great standard committees that are rewriting these all the time and working on them. But you can imagine it's a relatively slow process. And you know, going back to Ian's comment earlier on about, you know, one standard software platform, to get everyone to agree, I'm not sure we'd ever get there. And I think Ian acknowledged that a minute ago. So
I don't think Steph will be even good. Yeah.
But I think, you know, when you look at, to take cobots, there's been a massive advancement of cobots being used on the factory floor, and we've seen it. And actually, if you go and see how a lot of the applications have been provided into those environments, quite a lot of them I would deem as not necessarily being safe. And simple things like pressure and force measurement on a cobot within a factory environment. And I don't know whether you saw, there was a YouTube clip flying about recently where they got a cobot to pick up a very large knife, kitchen knife, and start swinging it around. People automatically assume that a cobot, because it's a cobot, is safe, and it's couldn't be further from the truth. And we're seeing a lot more guidance, either in technical reporting or as standards move in place to try and cover this. But that was a perfect example of where I think the technology was a little bit ahead of the standards at the time.
Yeah, and I think that is a factor. And I mean, geographical variations in standards, I suppose, is the other area, isn't it? Where, you know, the big trading blocks have standards, the US, the EU, Asia, and so on. But are they ever going to come together in a uniform set of standards that are applicable to everyone, which would be a great outcome, I guess?
Yeah, we made up Apple to create use USB-C now, and who knows?
Okay, brilliant. So thank you ever so much for that. I'm going to ask you just to comment on two questions. We mentioned the issue of data and the ownership of data. Now, this does seem to be quite a tricky area, particularly, you know, we've just rejoined Horizon. I mean, will that sort of small steps a little bit down the line make data transfer less of a hurdle between, say, the UK and the EU? What other hurdles are there in terms of ownership of data external to companies and indeed internal to companies, you know, who should have access to what and so on? So I don't know if anyone has any comments on the hurdles, if that's the right term. It's Peter's term, wasn't it? The hurdles of data and whether that's a problem. And then secondly, just as we close, where do you see us all in 5 years' time? Obviously here, but...
For me, that's 7 years near retirement. 7 years and I retire, yeah.
Well, my father retired at 89, so I've got a fair while to go, yeah.
Yeah, but it's good when you believe in a retirement. I lost that trust and belief in that many years ago. But it's probably down to the generation and the world how I see it, perceiving it now. My dad refusing to retire, and he just said that's not for him. But I do know other people which they just could not wait to go to retirement. Yeah. And then they get bored, and in 5 years they return back because they said, oh, it's not for me. Then it's everyone's got a different approach. From my point of view, if we're not going to stop educate ourselves, because that's kind of major things of progress, we will be here enjoying again the knowledge what's happening out there and able to communicate it. If we're not going to what we call fall asleep, that's one of the major things, to not to fall asleep, not to be blinded, stay open with the vision wide. And I'm sure there will be always a place in this world where we're going to be able to apply our knowledge. And if it's going to be safety, security, times will show. But somebody once said, oh, you got a good programmer mind. For me, 1 year of doing programming gave me absolutely showcase, this is not for you. Don't do it. You know, maybe in 5 years we're gonna find out when there is something even more exciting us. On the end, I think we should be satisfied with our world, and the world will spin. We're not gonna stop it.
Very true. Very true.
But now, Peter, you can ask AI to do the programming for you.
I will be a bit more skeptical in this, because in my case, in my opinion, when they will produce AI, hopefully I will be still alive. At this moment, it's AI marketing.
No, not necessarily. No, I built 3 websites in about 10 minutes using AI, you know, PHP based. I had the server knowledge. It was very, very easy. And the people going, you wrote that quickly? And no, I didn't write it at all. Austin AI.
But it's just reusing something what is there. It's not made a new things. That's the thing. Is all these language models and how they're putting things together. It's interesting thematics. And I think it's small steps in what AI is capable to be. But it's like you will ask 1 year old to smile on you, and it will smile on you because it sees it from you. It's inherited the look. If you never will smile on it, on that baby, it will never smile back. But it's taken a while to actually create the situations when it smiles on its own. And it's not that, it's a small step with AIs. I think we are far away from that to have a really independent AIs which actually can create things. And it's a little bit scary to think about it, because if it can create things, what is going to think about us, and what kind of mirror it will give us? Do we really want that? Because it's like I look in a mirror every morning and think, oh, what's going on here? It's aging. Mm-hmm. I can accept it or not accept it. Could we accept feedback from AI on ourselves as humanity? That's the question.
One of my colleagues on my chat just popped up. I could have an AI wife.
Moving on. Well, David, you're far too young to retire. So, where do you see it all going in 5 years?
Thank you very much. That's very kind of you, Andy. Although I'm not sure I believe you. Look, I think we're going to see more advanced technology around the safety sphere, and the general migration and the trends are going to continue. We're seeing a lot more inquiries for field bus systems. I know Ian with Dold and Oyton both have electronic key exchange systems now, and we've both put our links in the chat for those. But even things like the old, you know, the mechanical clunky systems moving over towards electronic based systems as well. So yeah, I see more and more of that. I think, you know, the IO link, safety over IO link, is probably going to be also hopefully a big part of the safety portfolio of the leading manufacturers in another 12 months or 18 months, depending when we get the final green tick in the box for the IO link safety.
Brilliant. Okay, well, let's leave it there. Thank you ever so much, guys, for your contributions, which were so fantastic that I've been quieter than I normally am, which can only be a good thing. It reminds me, talking of avant-garde jazz, as I remember as part of an electronics PR journalist group, we were taken to Ronnie Scott's to see a guy called Lee Kernitz on the saxophone, very avant-garde player. And we were rather rude, actually, and something I wouldn't approve, but we were kind of chatting quietly while he was playing, and he came over afterwards and said, I want you to hum along to the next tune. The benefit of that is you'll keep your mouth shut. So I kept my mouth shut today. I thought the contributions were absolutely terrific. Thank you very much to the panelists for taking part, and we look forward to seeing you at the next Talking Industry.
Talking Industry, topical debate from the world of engineering, automation, and manufacturing. Brought to you by DFA Media Group. This episode is sponsored by Drives and Controls, the number one event for automation, power transmission, and motion control. Taking place the 5th and the 6th of June 2024 at the NEC Birmingham, in association with Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week. Register now at www.drives-expo.com.